This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're kicking off a year-long project called Made in Connecticut. WNPR will examine the manufacturing industry and its role in the state's economy. Over the next several months, you'll be hearing stories about the place once known as the Provisions State, a state that for centuries has made things, helicopters and guns, precision instruments and instruments to be played with precision. We're launching this project with an event in front of a live audience inside the Chase Family Studios here at Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network. And we're going to start with a topic that's more important to Connecticut's manufacturing future than just about anything, keeping our good jobs here. Now, it seems obvious, of course, but it hasn't been easy maintaining a manufacturing presence as first southern states, then foreign countries began making some of the things that we made faster and cheaper. It led many to think that Connecticut was no longer a manufacturing hub. We see stories like this one today. Minnesota-based 3M closing a factory in Enfield that employs 142, moving some work to factories back in Minnesota and one to Mexico. But in some sectors, this trend is turning around. Where we once saw offshoring of jobs, we're seeing onshoring or new shoring. We're seeing a lot of manufacturing jobs retained right here in Connecticut. So that's what we're going to be talking about. And here to tell us more is WNPR's business editor, Harriet Jones. She just wrote about this for next month's Connecticut Magazine as part of our Made in Connecticut project. And she's here to sort out a lot of these terms that we have, onshoring, newshoring, offshoring. Hi, Harriet.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. So tell us a little bit about this. I mean, we've been hearing about jobs leaving Connecticut and jobs leaving the U.S. for years. Are we seeing a real turnaround here?
So yes, so the past two or three decades we've been hearing about offshoring and outsourcing and work disappearing from Connecticut, and that has really been happening at times at a very alarming rate. If you think about just after the Second World War, maybe half the population was employed in manufacturing, half the working population. Now it's about 11%. So you can see the long-term decline in the number of people that manufacturing actually employs in the state. And some of that decline has been due to offshoring, to work going to cheaper areas of the world like Asia. So that's been a long-term trend. About maybe 4 years ago, maybe 2009, 2010, we started to hear this term reshoring. So reshoring is the idea that perhaps now the economics of offshoring may have changed and work might start to come back the other way, might start to come from Asia back to the U.S.
So what about the economics change? Is it getting cheaper to make stuff here or what?
Well, there's a couple of different things. The biggest differential that caused the offshoring boom was labor. China and other countries in Asia have much cheaper labor rates. Even given some of the problems there were with offshoring, the cost differential might be 30, 40, 50, even 60% cheaper to make something in Asia just because of that labor rate. And people obviously paid much more here. That cost differential has changed. Wages in China are rising. Some reports have it at 15, 20% a year. So that cost differential is changing very fast.
So it's important to note, not necessarily that it's getting all that much cheaper to do business in Connecticut, but that indeed as the economy booms in a place like China, as people get more prosperous, they're paying better wages, it just costs more to do stuff there.
Right, and it's also it's highlighting the problems there always were with offshoring. Offshoring was never that easy of a choice because there were always quality problems, there were always problems with losing your intellectual property perhaps in the kind of Wild West atmosphere of manufacturing over there. Actually flying there to go and manage your work was very expensive. Those things didn't matter when you were getting that huge labor cost differential. Now the labor costs are equalizing a little bit more. Those things are coming into relief, the time to market, the time to ship things, the cost to ship things. All those things are becoming a bigger factor.
But that's a fascinating thing about the story you wrote. Just keeping an eye on a precision manufacturing piece. Somebody sends something overseas, but then they're not sure it's getting done exactly right. They can't keep an eye on it. They got to fly overseas. That's cost thousands and thousands of dollars. It doesn't seem like such a good deal anymore.
Exactly. So again, if you don't have that huge labor cost differential, now you're going to factor in all those, the cost of the flight, the cost of having to rerun production if something wasn't right when it came back the first time.
So now hold it. We're being very rosy about this. Is this bringing back a ton of jobs right now? I mean, what are we really seeing as far as trends?
Well, I think that's one of the very interesting things to look at during this discussion is, how much work is coming back? What industries is it coming back into? Because it may be coming back in some industries more than in others. And is work coming back or are jobs coming back? That might be a very different thing, because one of the other things that's changed here is we have much better technology, we have additive manufacturing, we have automation. There are, we have much higher worker productivity here than we ever had.
When the job went away, a couple people did it. It comes back, but maybe now one person or no people do it because we've just improved the technology.
Exactly. So it may be that work is done here, but not so many people are employed doing it.
So we're keeping jobs around precision jobs, too. It's not just the making the little trinkets that somebody can do anywhere in the world, because it doesn't matter how well they're made. Here in Connecticut, we've got precision manufacturing. We have, all the way back to the Sam Colt days, those are the things that are really staying right here in Connecticut.
Correct. If anything comes back, it's going to be those very high-skilled jobs. It's going to be the jobs where we have the people who really know how to do it. So skilled manufacturing is going to be the thing that comes back.
Harriet Jones is WNPR's business editor, and you can read more on this story about offshoring and reshoring jobs here in Connecticut in next month's Connecticut Magazine. Thanks so much, Harriet.
You're welcome.
I want to turn to Senator Chris Murphy, who wrote the American Jobs Matter bill. It's something he's talked about on our program before. And when we talk about bringing jobs back to Connecticut, when we talk about having jobs stay in the United States, he's one of the first people I want to talk to. So, Senator Chris Murphy, welcome back to our show. Thanks very much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Before we talk about that bill so much, you were just in my hometown of Winsted today. Harriet was mentioning to us high-tech manufacturing that's not, your father's manufacturing job. Where were you today?
So I was at a company called Sterling Sintered, and there are a couple of different kinds of manufacturing that we do here in Connecticut. We certainly do the high-value-added manufacturing. We do defense manufacturing, and I hope we'll get the chance to talk about that, because that's a lot of what my initiatives in Washington are structured around. And then we also do a different kind of manufacturing, which is low volume or quick turnaround manufacturing. If a company needs a small volume of parts or needs it very fast, it just doesn't make sense to offshore that. So they're going to get that locally. And so this is a company in Winsted that makes parts out of metals like copper and nickel. They do relatively small batches of work. They're a job shop, and they turn it around very quickly. So at any one time, they'll have 100-plus parts that are out on the line, but they stay in business because they're not really competing with China in the sense that nobody is going to go buy a lot of 1,000 small washers for an aerospace assembly line from a company in China when they can get it very quickly for a cheaper cost overall, all value added from Connecticut.
It's part of a pipeline, though. As long as we have these defense jobs, these very complicated jobs, we're going to have a lot of these little job shops making small amounts of things. So it seems to me that what you're saying, and certainly what we've been hearing over the years, is if those big manufacturers do take their work elsewhere, that's where the small company in Winsted might suffer.
Yes, so when it comes to defense work, we're a small state, but we actually rank sixth in the nation in terms of the total amount of defense work and defense dollars that are spent in Connecticut. And because that supply chain ends in Connecticut, the assembly is done in Connecticut, a lot of that supply chain stays in Connecticut or stays in the region. So you'll walk into a lot of small shops that have only four or five people maybe working there, and they're supplying one or two specific parts that are going into the submarine or going into the new F-35 engine or into the Black Hawk. And so why we work as a delegation so hard on making sure that our prime contractors stay here in Connecticut with high volumes of work is because that flows deep, deep down into the secondary and tertiary suppliers in Connecticut.
Now, as I was just talking with Harriet Jones about this idea of an onshoring trend in the United States, are you seeing this? Are you seeing more manufacturing coming back, not just to Connecticut, but to the U.S. for the reasons that she talked about?
Well, we're absolutely seeing big numbers of manufacturing jobs come back to the United States. We've added hundreds of thousands of manufacturing jobs. Even during the depths of the recession, we were adding manufacturing jobs, at least at low levels, because of the dynamics that Harriet talked about. Now, admittedly, a lot of those jobs were coming into the southern portions of the state who have lower labor rates than the Northeast and who have today a lot easier access to cheap energy and to cheap gas. And so Connecticut, we've held our own in terms of manufacturing jobs, but I think there is an open question as to whether Connecticut is going to be part of this reindustrialization of America that is happening. Connecticut is poised specifically in the area of aerospace to be part of that reindustrialization. There is an enormous backlog of aerospace work that needs to be done, particularly on the private sector side. And if Connecticut is smart about how we invest in workforce and how we invest in technology, then we can be part of that. But admittedly, we have not seen the numbers of increased manufacturing jobs that other parts of the country have seen over the past 5 years.
So what do we do to make those smart investments? If you could help get Connecticut into that top tier of places where jobs are coming back to, where jobs in manufacturing are growing, what are some things we need to do, some barriers you think we might need to break down?
So I'll give you four quick things, and risking a Rick Perry moment here in which I promise you four things and then don't deliver.
I will remind you if you don't give
me four.
And then don't
deliver on four things.
Trust me.
So I may have to now make up the fourth one as I forget them. So he only gave you three. So first, protect the defense jobs that are coming in through places like Electric Boat and Sikorsky and Pratt & Whitney. If you're protecting those jobs, you are protecting a lot of jobs that flow from there. Second, be smart about workforce. People come to Connecticut to locate manufacturing jobs here because we have the best workers in the world, and what the governor is doing by building advanced manufacturing training centers at our community colleges is scratching manufacturers exactly where they itch. All these people that are coming out of these advanced manufacturing programs at places like Nuntuck Community College in Enfield, they are all getting jobs. And we just need to have more slots. Third, have smart tax policy. There's no reason why you should punish a manufacturer for investing in new equipment, and yet you have to pay a whole bunch of property taxes when you put a new piece of machinery in. Machinery is not our enemy. It's actually our friend. So the more that technology is additive to manufacturing, the lower the labor quotient of a particular piece of goods that's produced. That actually helps us in the United States. Fourth, transportation. Doesn't do us any good if we can't get things in and out of Connecticut. So unclogging the routes to the ports of Boston and New York will help big international companies decide to make things here in Connecticut. But if they can't get the things they make here anywhere else, we're stuck.
So that sounds like an investment in infrastructure, making sure things can go from one place to the next. But let's get back to that smart tax policy piece. People in the state, they need their tax dollars, right? And they're getting it from manufacturers. They're getting it from high-wealth individuals. How do you balance the needs of the state and the local communities to tax with what you're calling smart tax policy?
I'm not suggesting that we're going to, gut our tax base by simply saying that for machinery that's being put into a local manufacturer that they should get a discount. I think we're talking about targeted investments. We want to reauthorize something at the federal level called the Research and Development Tax Credit, which is utilized by a lot of big companies in Connecticut that manufacture and innovate. So we're not talking about an overhaul necessarily of the tax code, as some are here. We're talking about just targeting some tax breaks to manufacturers that could badly need them.
What about our trade policy overseas? I mean, how might we get to some sort of a fairer trade system as opposed to just what we've called free trade over the years, which seems to have allowed so many jobs to flow south of the border?
Yeah, I would be one of the people that would argue that our trade policy hasn't worked, not because the theory behind free trade isn't sound, but because when you're sitting across the table from a group of countries like those that we negotiated NAFTA with, or an individual country like Korea that we just completed a round of negotiations with, that's your one opportunity to force those countries to raise their labor standards and raise their environmental standards, not so they're equal to the United States, but so they at least approximate ours. And I would just argue that we have not done a very good job of negotiating the labor concessions and environmental standard concessions with those countries such that jobs flew out of this out of the United States once we signed those deals. But there are some really good trade agreements that could be on the horizon. For instance, we are in the beginning stages of negotiating a trade agreement with Europe. Now, Europe doesn't have the same problems that the developing world does in terms of undercutting American labor costs, but there are enormous tariffs and non-tariff barriers in Europe that keep our products from those markets. And so I'm a big fan of that trade agreement because it could unlock a lot of markets for goods produced in Connecticut without necessarily undercutting labor costs like some of these previous agreements have.
Today we're listening to a conversation we had with Senator Chris Murphy about keeping jobs in Connecticut and the U.S., moving them from overseas back here. It's the launch of our Made in Connecticut project, And this show was taped in front of a live audience at the Chase Family Studios here at Connecticut Public Broadcasting. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Senator Murphy. We'll also hear from some folks in the manufacturing industry who joined us for the broadcast. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're listening back to a conversation we had with Senator Chris Murphy and some local manufacturers about bringing jobs back to Connecticut. It's the launch of our Made in Connecticut series, which was taped in front of a live audience at the Chase Family Studios here at Connecticut Public Broadcasting. If you want to find out more about the series, go to WNPR.org or you can go to CPTV.org. A bit later, we'll talk about the American Jobs Matter Act, an act that's been introduced a number of times by Senator Murphy. But first, let's meet some folks who are in the manufacturing industry themselves. Chris Lorch is owner of Alloy Engineering in Bridgeport. She's joined us on Where We Live in the past.
Chris, welcome to Where We Live. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I also want to welcome in Sonny Morneau, who's National Sales Manager for Whitman Battenfield. And Sonny, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here as well.
Thanks for having me.
Chris, I'll ask you first, tell us what Alloy Engineering does exactly.
We manufacture for the process industries a product called a thermal well, which is a protection tube, goes into pipelines, and we manufacture on the backside of gas turbine generators a unit that monitors the temperature.
So how much have you seen your business grow in the last 10 years, 5 years?
My business has been constant.
Yeah.
I haven't lost a lot, and I haven't gained a lot. What we have seen is a change in who our customers are and where we're shipping our product.
So who are your customers?
Our customers are Emerson, General Electric, just about every large manufacturer or a construction maker in the globe. And they are global now. Years ago, when we started in the 50s, they were local, or they'd find out about us from a local company, and they were building a facility or a plant someplace. And they'd put our name on their drawings so that the product would be purchased from us. But more recently, everything has changed. I mean, the world has shrunk to this tiny thing because we have instant access anywhere in the world.
Who's your competition?
My competition is in Singapore, Canada, nothing to Mexico, and Europe, and India.
And so what does your competition do that's different than you? Do you see jobs, the type of work that you do, moving other places quickly?
I see it hopping around a lot.
Tell me more.
And I'm sorry to say it that way. One of the companies requires a reverse auction where their global customers log into this network site once every 2 or 3 years, and we bid on different lots of material, sort of like bidding on a lot at the local storage company. And the difference on their lots is that nobody knows what anybody else is bidding. Mm-hmm. They'll tell you what place you're in, but that you could be at $500,000 for a market basket and be number two, and the number one person could be at $230,000. So you have 10 minutes to bid on the products in each category, and you hope and pray to God that you don't hit the wrong key.
If nothing else, that sounds amazingly stressful.
It is incredibly stressful. Incredibly stressful. But, and I don't even know who I'm bidding with. I'll find out eventually, but I could be bidding with someone in Sri Lanka or Singapore or India, and their labor market is totally different from mine.
So when you heard Harriet and I setting up this conversation talking about new shoring and reshoring of jobs here, are you hopeful that United States and Connecticut specifically is able to be competitive in this global market?
I think America needs to be competitive in this market, in every market. America needs to manufacture, not just Connecticut. America has to bring back its manufacturing base. We can't have our young men in the military going overseas with a hat that said it was made in Sri Lanka, or pants that said they were made in China, or, you know, bullets that aren't American. Hello? If my son or daughter was going overseas to fight in a war, I'd like to know that their bullets came from America and their weapons and anything else, because they're going for love of country. So I want to protect them with the best quality material.
Well, okay, so Chris Murphy, this gets to, I'll come back to Sonny in just a moment. This gets to this idea of the American jobs matter. Chris has just made a very passionate case for why it makes sense for us to manufacture our own stuff at home. Some of that sounds very good. Some of it sounds not as realistic as we would like. Why do you think it matters, what you just said?
Well, I think it matters for two reasons. One, when we're sending our taxpayer dollars to Washington, we should expect that they're spent here in the United States. And that's a sound reinvestment of our money. Now, the Department of Defense will say, well, but I can get this particular widget for 10% cheaper from a company in China. So I'm spending taxpayer dollars. Why shouldn't I try to get the best value? The argument has to be much more holistic, that yes, you are going to pay 10% less on that particular item. But when that company that used to make it in the United States goes out of business and those workers go out on the streets, well, all of a sudden you start costing the government a lot more in Medicaid and unemployment compensation. You lose all the tax revenue. And so it makes sense to buy things in the United States for things like the United States military, because even if you pay a little bit more, you're going to get a return on your investment. But second, when you're talking about the military specifically, there is a national security argument to making things here. We buy an awful lot of pieces for the United States military from suppliers in China. We cannot guarantee that 20 years from now, we are not going to be in some international dispute with China through which they would shut off the supply chain to some of our most important components within the military. So we have a national security interest in sourcing military parts here at home. I think that's secondary. I think the economic interest and the economic argument, especially for a state like Connecticut, can win the day on its own.
Before I get more into the details of the American Jobs Matter bill, something that Chris just said, though, that I think is important. She said it's important that these jobs and this work comes back to America, not necessarily Connecticut. If it comes to Connecticut, it comes to Connecticut, but it's important to have them come to America. So this is the conundrum, right? Every state wants to see the jobs come back here. You're a senator for Connecticut. You want to bring jobs back here. Connecticut might not be the best place to make whatever we need to make. How do we reconcile these two things?
Well, I think it's about being strategic in terms of what your contribution as a state or a region can be to the renaissance of American manufacturing. And, you know, we know what we do very well here in Connecticut. We do high value-added manufacturing that has a big R&D component when you have to be re-engineering something very quickly, because we have a lot of that talent here in the States. We obviously do defense manufacturing well. So I don't think we have to be greedy and suggest that Connecticut is going to or should have a part in every kind of work that's being reshored back to America. But there are particular skill sets that we have and we've traditionally done very well.
I want to welcome back Sonny Bourneau to talk a bit about the work that Whitman Battenthal does. Tell me about your company.
We're a manufacturer of injection molding machines, robots and automation, and auxiliary equipment to support the plastics industry.
So tell me a bit more about how your business has been doing in the last 5 years or so.
The plastics industry as a whole since 2009 has grown tremendously in the United States. We as a company have grown over 25% consistently since 2009. And being centered in Connecticut, we're pretty proud of that fact.
So these robots that you make, tell me more about that. Anybody makes robots, I want to hear more.
The robots that we make are called Cartesian robots, where they're moved in an XYZ capacity. They're typically mounted on an injection molding machine, and those injection molding machines are manufacturing plastic parts at high speeds, let's say a 10-second cycle time, where we're manufacturing 60 cups at a shot. Our robots will come down, take those parts from the molding machine and do something with them, stack them, pack them, do some secondary operation or something like that.
So how is that different than what Chinese robots are doing?
Well, the technology behind how to use the robot is the difficult part. It does take a more skilled person than what we typically see in China. We are a multinational company. We manufacture all over the world. But we see typically if we go and spend the time and energy to train a Chinese operator, they'll leave that company, within 5 minutes, and then that company's left to find someone else. So the companies themselves over there just don't want to make the investment. The labor is the labor. We'll just keep throwing labor at it. And I've seen some pretty scary things on how they remove these parts from these machines, like laying underneath it and catching them with their hands. Obviously, for safety reasons, that's not very recommended. But that's a big element of it, is we're more skilled here, and we're able to find good operators. We're able to train them efficiently, and they take a better advantage of the product.
But it's important, as a multinational company, and you do manufacture everywhere, talk about that calculus. How do you decide what gets made in America, what gets made in country X?
Well, it certainly gets down to unit cost, where we're going to sell the highest volume of that particular product. We recently heard from BMW that they actually manufacture the X Series BMWs in their Alabama plant for Europe, because the volume of usage in the U.S. is much higher than it is in Europe. So the unit cost for that product to manufacture in the USA is more cost effective. So we do the same thing. Our molding machines are actually manufactured in Kottenbrunn, Austria. Our European market is about 60% of our market, so it makes more sense for us to manufacture those large iron-based products over there. We do the robots and automation here in the U.S. for the U.S. market.
So what are some of the things that you've heard so far that maybe you might want to expound upon, trends that you think maybe are realistic or not? I mean, do you see more jobs coming back to America or to Connecticut because of some of the factors we've discussed?
Well, as Harriet said, the work is coming back. You know, obviously as an automation company, we don't necessarily help people find jobs. We help people automate their technology and be more efficient so that they can be more competitive than what we're seeing in China. However, on the front side of that, we've increased our workforce by 20% to manufacture the automation and the robots on the front side. So there is the jobs increase come, but it's not on necessarily reshoring those jobs. Now, what we do see with a lot of customers, Whirlpool and Walmart, Apple, they all have announced recent initiatives to bring molds back from China, from Asia, back to the USA so that they do manufacture locally. And when they do that, they are going to want more technology to be able to be more cost-effective, unit cost, again, getting down to that.
Whenever we do these live events, I have this terrible habit of putting people on the spot, and I'm going to do it right now. Catherine Smith from the DECD is here. Commissioner, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Glad to be here, John.
And thank you for supporting this initiative that we're doing. Obviously, we're going to have a lot of conversations with you and the folks that you work with about making things in Connecticut. This idea of work versus jobs is fascinating to me, because one of the things that you are trying to do is launch a number of initiatives at the state level to bring jobs to Connecticut, to entice companies to start up here or to create more jobs, keep jobs here, not leave. But when we're talking about some of the manufacturing being work more than jobs, that is a little bit of a challenge here. Talk about how you deal with that issue.
Well, I think actually it plays into something the senator talked about moments ago, which is one of the great core strengths of Connecticut has always been our R&D, our innovation. And so having us do the technology that makes work easier and quicker and more cost-effective is really, I think, the heart of what one of our skill sets is, and we should be developing that here in the state. And frankly, we do have a lot of jobs that are in the R&D component part of this. But the other part that can come right along with that is the prototyping and the manufacturing that comes with new innovation and new ideas. So while we are probably not going to see the days where we're creating a widget, I think is what you described earlier, in mass quantities, we can be extremely good at inventing the new part that's going to be lighter and more efficient, or inventing the new automation system that will make the work easier, and doing the prototyping and making those initial forays into that area. So I don't see these things as contradictory, although, of course, we do want to continue to see the job growth in the state. But I think we can do both if we stay focused on, again, the strengths that we have here, which is in innovation.
When Senator Murphy was talking about the tax structure and some of these issues, these are the things we talk with you and the governor about when it comes to this state-to-state competition. Obviously, we want to bring jobs to the U.S., but then amongst the U.S. states, we're competing. There's tax incentives, there's tax policy, there's different ways, including just the quality of life, that might get people to move their companies here. Talk a bit about how you go about competing for Connecticut jobs with other U.S. states with this overall goal that obviously we want to make sure we're getting jobs from overseas, too, as a country.
Well, if we focus on manufacturing, you know, we talked a little bit about this earlier, and the senator again mentioned that we're trying to improve the trade with Europe. Now, Europeans look at our cost structure as actually favorable compared to what they see in Europe. And so I think it's all relative, right, about where you stand and where you sit. So what we're trying to do is take advantage, again, of the enormous strengths that we have here in the state. We have incredible research institutions that are leading edge in some of the areas particularly helpful to manufacturing, be that battery usage, be that composites, be that additive manufacturing. So we want to make sure we continue to invest in the university system so we have that great technical resource that companies really want to be a part of and next to. And we also want to make sure that we have a critical mass of the kind of talent that the companies are looking for. And that, again, speaks to our education systems, but it also speaks to the fact that when you have a number of the companies that are working in similar industries, they can share. They can take some of the innovations from one industry to another. And again, I think Connecticut has traditionally had that. We had a downward period that Harriet described to us a while ago, but I think we're starting to see those cornerstones of our future growth being rebuilt. So I'm actually quite optimistic for the manufacturing sector.
Senator Murphy, do you see the roots of a national manufacturing policy that allows the U.S. to compete for jobs, the global jobs, while making sure that all of the parts of the country that have traditionally had manufacturing as part of their heritage, or maybe might be on the cutting edge of a new type of 3D printing or other manufacturing, so that we can make sure that the right jobs are going to the right places from a federal or a national level? Do you see that happening in the U.S.?
No, I don't. I don't see that happening right now. And it's a shame because there is such an opportunity that is sitting right before us because of market forces, international global economics that are tilting in our direction. And Harriet laid them out, whether it's the cost of transportation or the declining currency differentiations or the increase in labor costs overseas. The global recovery and the next wave of advanced manufacturing is there for the taking here in the United States, but we are not at the federal level doing the simple things necessary to take advantage of that trend. Now, I mentioned smart trade policy. We have not had smart trade policy at the federal level. We have not identified the new waves of manufacturing like renewable energy and built a domestic marketplace that would increase demand for domestically produced goods. We have not come to terms with the fact that there's no weakness in greater coordination at the federal level between government and the private sector to make sure that when we put money into education, it's always going into the sectors that are meeting the actual demand of industry. Companies, countries like Germany are constantly talking between private industry and government to make sure that they're marrying together strategies. But the United States is still arguing as to whether we should have that kind of coordination between public and private sectors. So, no, I would argue that we have succeeded despite a rather lackluster record at the federal government of creating a national manufacturing strategy.
Well, and I hate to ask the nasty political question, but whose fault is that? Why is that happening? I mean, is it just because Congress can't get its act together? Is there something deeper here? Do you think that the president hasn't focused enough on this? Why is this happening now?
Well, I think it's happening because there's a group in Congress today that really wants the federal government to withdraw from the marketplaces. And I think a lot of us just want us to remember what our economic roots are as a country. We're the country that got the mixture of public investment and private ingenuity better than any other country in the world. To the extent that we lead the world in certain manufacturing techniques, it's not in spite of the government, it's because of investments that were made through the Department of Defense or NASA or NIH when it comes to medical device technology. And so it's just important to remember that the reason we don't have this strategy is not because we're trying and failing, it's because we're largely not trying, in that a lot of the new members of Congress just don't believe that the federal government should be in the business of coordinating a national manufacturing strategy.
When we come back, Senator Chris Murphy will give us an in-depth look at his American Jobs Matter Act. This is part of a conversation we had during the launch of our Made in Connecticut series, taped in front of a live audience at the Chase Family Studios here at Connecticut Public Broadcasting. Also joining us for this conversation is Sonny Morneau, National Sales Manager for Whitman Battenfeld, and Chris Lorch, the owner of Alloy Engineering in Bridgeport. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on tomorrow's show, the Affordable Care Act has provided health care insurance to millions of Americans who didn't have it before. but that does not necessarily mean that we will have better access to health care or even better health. As part of our health equity project, we're going to look at the results of a new survey that tells us exactly how healthy Connecticut really is post-ACA and how we can get healthier. Hope you can join us. Today, we're listening back to a conversation we had to kick off our year-long Made in Connecticut series. Senator Chris Murphy joined us, along with Sonny Morneau from Whitman Battenfeld and Chris Lorch from Alloy Engineering. They're both in the manufacturing industry. We're talking about how to keep manufacturing jobs here in Connecticut, maybe move jobs back from overseas. They joined us in the Chase Family Studios here at Connecticut Public Broadcasting. We'll start the segment talking about the American Jobs Matter Act. It's an act that Senator Chris Murphy's been working on for some years.
Okay, so I'll give you a chance now. Let's talk more about the American Jobs Matter bill. I mean, what exactly is it that we should be doing here? What can the federal government do to get involved in this? Tell us more about this policy.
So the American Jobs Matter Act is pretty simple. When the federal government awarded a contract for the new Air Force refueling tanker, which at the time was the biggest military contract ever awarded, there was essentially a tie between a European company and a U.S. company. And when we asked why we didn't get credit, the American bid, for the fact that it was going to create thousands more jobs here in the United States than the European bid would, the contracting agency told us because we're not allowed to give any advantage for American content or American job creation. And so the American Jobs Matter Act simply says that one of the factors that the federal government should look at when they're awarding work is which bidder is going to create more jobs here in the United States. Now, you should weigh quality and you should weigh cost, but you should also weigh who's going to create more jobs in the U.S. A lot of my constituents thought that was always the law, but the fact is it's not permissible, and we think it should be one of the factors.
Chris Lorch, what do you think about that? I mean, you raised the issue earlier. Do you think that that's the sort of thing that would make a difference?
Absolutely. I'm 100% in favor of it.
You have a U.S. senator sitting right next to you, so tell him some things that maybe aren't working so well. I mean, what can the government do to make your job easier?
Oh, my.
Lay it on me.
No. I'm not looking for a freebie, and I'm certainly not looking for any government to make my job easier. Right now, the government does make my job easier in many respects. The state of Connecticut does a fabulous job in its technical high school system and now in the two-year community colleges of training people to work for me. Great work. They do a fabulous job. They turn out a product that walks into my business and they are ready for hire. I can't say that about the comprehensive high schools because we train those students to go on to a four-year college or some other profession. But the technical high schools, absolutely the best place to hire a person. 100%.
And
good job.
And we've profiled, for instance, the Asnuntuk program.
Yes.
Look, you think that this is something that, if with more investment, perhaps, the state could be turning out more workers ready for the jobs? Because one of the things we've heard, Chris, is there are a lot of people with companies like yours who would like to find more workers, and they're just not out there in Connecticut. They're not being created.
That's right. They're not being produced fast enough. The aerospace industry is in pain on occasion because they can't find enough machinists to work and manufacture their product. Asnuntuk does a great job. We have Naugatuck Community College, Housatonic, and I forgot one.
See, that always happens when you start to make a list.
Quinnipiac.
There's four.
Quinnipiac. That's it. Thank you very much. It's a new program. It's in its second year. I've hired people from that program, too.
Sonny Morneau, how about you? With the U.S. senator here, maybe say some things that the government could do better, things that are working right now for you.
One of the things for us, because we're capital equipment sellers, is we hear from our customers that the last few years, the capital equipment depreciation tax credits were a big reason for them to make investments, and those tax credits are gone. We've gone cold, practically, in this Q1 now of the new year. And then we're hearing that quite a bit from a lot of our customers, is saying they're going to hold back. That big tax benefit for them to make these purchases for capital equipment isn't there any longer. So that was one of the things. And, of course, the health care. We have We have a lot of independent agents, sales agents, that are small business owners, and I'm consistently pushing them to hire more people, get more staff. I want more feet on the street, more people selling. And they push back to me is, I can't entice a new guy, a young engineer, a young sales guy to come in and work for me because the healthcare cost is just inordinate. And the new healthcare act did make it easier. But when they go online and it's 150% higher than as a small business guy than what they've traditionally been able to provide, it's just not affordable. So now we're at a stalemate. They can't afford to bring people on. I don't want to hire direct people everywhere. And it's just kind of, we don't know what to do. And it's something needs to happen.
That is an outgrowth, Senator Murphy, that we've heard about the new healthcare law, some of the unintended consequences for small business people. For those entering into the market for the very first time who are working on their own, this is overwhelmingly, it seems, a great thing. But for many people in the situation that Sonny's outlining, it can cause some problems.
Well, you know, anytime you reorder 1/6 of the American economy, you know, I think we should expect some bumps along the road. A lot of the small business marketplaces haven't opened up around the country, which are going to give some discounts. And as you build out the pools that are in these exchanges, either for individuals or for small businesses, and the act actually plans for those pools to be joined at some point, the small business pool and the individual pool, you'll start to see discounts be handed down. But you hear that all across the board in Connecticut, that when you sort of listen to the complaints from manufacturers about what holds them back from creating jobs, over and over again, you'll hear about healthcare costs and energy costs, that to locate a job here in Connecticut is expensive to begin with just because of labor costs being higher than other parts of the country. But when you tack on top of that higher healthcare costs and higher energy costs, it sometimes is prohibitive. So as a state, not just as a nation, we've got to be focused like a laser on all of those costs that sometimes put Connecticut at a disadvantage.
Chris, go ahead.
There is something that the senator can do for the manufacturers in Connecticut.
I'm so glad you had one.
Thank you. It's called the Manufacturing Reinvestment Account, MRA. You've heard of it. Connecticut passed it a year ago. And what it allows a small manufacturer like myself to save money to buy a large ticket machine or to buy a new manufacturing facility or to train its employees. Those are the only three things you can do with the money. And you're topped out at like $500,000. It's the maximum you can save. And you're spending that money, I could buy Sonny's equipment.
It sounds like an HSA. It's like a health savings account.
It's an IRA for a business.
Yeah, you put the money aside essentially pre-tax, and you're able to use it to invest back in your manufacturing company. To give a plug to the authors of the legislation, it's actually Senator Blumenthal and Representative DeLauro who originally introduced it, and I am a big supporter of it. And, you know, as I talk about that leg of smart manufacturing strategy that is better tax policy, that should be part of that conversation.
Yeah. And where is that being held up, Chris?
Well, you know, we're just not doing anything when it comes to tax reform right now. And so, you know, hopefully if we have a broader conversation about, and listen, we could have a whole show on how our tax structure disadvantages Connecticut and U.S. manufacturers. We have a crazy tax code in which we lump all these taxes on top of labor, whereas other countries put their taxes on consumption, and the combination of the two puts the United States at a direct disadvantage. We've got to have a broader conversation about smart tax policy, but this should be part of that.
Yeah, well, we're taping this on tax day here. Happy tax day, everyone. So I'm sure everyone feels some resonance with that. We've got a microphone, and I'd like to invite our audience. If anybody has some thoughts, some questions, questions of the senator or other manufacturers, please raise your hand. This is we've got a great group of people in the audience. I'm sure somebody wants to add to the conversation. I'm pretty sure of that. If not, I'm just going to ask you to hand the microphone to John Rathgaber of CBIA.
That's putting him on the spot.
John Rathgaber from the CBIA is here. Hi, John.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for coming in, and thanks for all your support over the years. What are some things in this conversation that particularly resonate with you as we try to bring jobs back to Connecticut?
Well, I think the main thing is that economic competitiveness doesn't mean you have to be the cheapest place to do business, but you have to be one of the best. And I honestly do believe that Connecticut has the opportunity to be one of the best places to do business for certain types of manufacturing activities. My focus, and my what I'd encourage people to focus on, is the economic base that we already have, the industrial base we already have in Connecticut, which I think has the opportunity to grow and reestablish a manufacturing base throughout the state. The aerospace manufacturing story is just a remarkable story where you're going to see an enormous backlog of orders coming forward over the next couple of years in a fairly rapid period of time, in which 80% of those engines are going to be built in the supply chain. That supply chain is in desperate need of our community tech schools, our technical high schools to produce the kind of human capital necessary in order to build those engines.
Are we in danger of not having the supply chain that all these orders need?
Yeah, we are. You know, as I go around the state of Connecticut and talk to small manufacturers, they're very concerned that they will not have the capacity to do the work that's coming down the pipeline. And if that capacity goes someplace else, Connecticut loses in the long term. So we really have to focus on making sure we maintain those areas where we've always had a critical advantage, talent being the number one, the greatest productivity, the greatest innovation of any workforce in the world. We do need to address things like energy costs, and we have the opportunity to do that in the state of Connecticut in a policy direction under this administration to try and bring down energy costs, maintaining cleaner energy supplies. And we also have to deal with other cost issues like healthcare. But right now, I would be focusing on the diversity of manufacturers in Connecticut and the opportunity to grow those manufacturers by giving them, making this the best place for them to do those activities.
Any thoughts on what John had to say?
Well, you're starting to hear some stories from aerospace manufacturers that are turning down offers of work because they don't have the labor capacity to do the job. And that's why that Commissioner Smith and Governor Malloy are focused on building out these advanced manufacturing centers as quickly as possible, because I don't think that will continue to be a trend so long as we invest in the workforce. And I would just agree with John. Energy is a real opportunity for us. One of the reasons why you're seeing an explosion of manufacturing in the Gulf states is because they lie at the end of these gas pipelines. And so all of the cheap shale gas that's being produced in the Midwest is ending up at the end of pipelines where manufacturers are clustering. Well, you can't get gas into Connecticut now. And so we need to build pipeline capacity into this state, not just so that consumers and residential customers can get access to it, but so that we have cheaper gas available for manufacturers as well. That's not an easy subject to talk about, new gas pipelines. It conjures up a lot of NIMBYism, but that's a huge potential for Connecticut. The healthcare thing is tougher for us to solve, but we can get cheaper energy prices if we focus on gas transmission.
I think the other part of the gas transmission issue is that it has local impacts in places that aren't here. We need gas to come in here. In Pennsylvania, gas extraction is a very different and much more complicated story. It's, again, one that maybe begs a national conversation, Senator Murphy, not just one that's local. If it's state by state, some people want it, some people don't.
Well, and again, where's that national strategy? I mean, and this is all stuff that should have easy bipartisan agreement. I mean, there's all sorts of ideological reasons why we're going to argue over investment or in renewables or not to invest in renewables or over healthcare policy. But we should all be able to get on the same page when it comes to a national manufacturing strategy. Yes, there are some environmental groups who are squeamish about fracking, but there are enough of Democrats like me who think that with the right set of environmental controls that we can safely extract shale gas and bring it to places like Connecticut. So these really should be opportunities for bipartisan cooperation around a manufacturing agenda and around at least an energy agenda that feeds some additional gas supplies into states in the Northeast.
Well, good luck getting some of that wrangled in Washington. That's all I can say every time I see you. There's a lot of stuff that needs to be done through consensus down there, and I know it's a very hard conversation to have, but I want to thank you for being part of it today. Senator Chris Murphy, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
I also want to thank Sonny Morneau, National Sales Manager for Whitman and Battenfeld. Their U.S. headquarters here in Torrington. Sonny, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thanks to Chris Lorch, owner of Alloy Engineering in Bridgeport, for talking about your work with us today. Thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you. Grateful to participate.
I want to thank KBE Building Corporation, Cafe Louis Catering, and Whole Foods. I want to thank Harry Jones, Tucker Ives, Lydia Brown, and Katie Tolarski, who produce our program. And also thanks to Jane Marino, Nancy Bauer, Joe Koss, and Larry Remming. And thanks to our audience here at the Chase Family Studios as we kick off the Made in Connecticut project here on Where We Live.